It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 130. This is your husky-voiced host, Adam Mangum. I am joined by my brother, Matt. We talk about our trip to Wisconsin, what it was like to see a game at Camp Randall. We also recap the game, what we learned about Cody Hoffman. Spoiler, he's a stud. We also talk about the offense and the defense and the struggles from both sides of the ball. We also talk about the rest of the season, whether the Cougars can beat Notre Dame. We talk a little bit of basketball, and we also draft our favorite and best wide receivers in BYU history. Again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Catch us on LoyalCougars.com, get us on iTunes, and listen to us right now. Rise and Shout Podcast, Matt. How you feeling today?
I feel better than I did yesterday. Every day is a step forward.
Yes. We're recording this on Monday night, so just FYI, we will talk a little basketball, but we're not going to talk a lot because there's a game later tonight that will give us a lot more information than the Weber State game did. But you're talking about football and how you felt yesterday.
I was mostly tired yesterday, honestly.
Why? Because we spent 8 hours in a car driving to and from Madison, Wisconsin.
And I had to fly from Houston to Minneapolis just to get ready to do that.
Yes, you did.
It was quite the whirlwind weekend. It was a great trip, though.
It was fun. Cool campus.
Yeah, cool campus. Fans were cool. That stadium's nice.
Yeah.
It's very large.
Yeah, that's it's large, and everybody wears red.
Oh my gosh!
They
are good at that.
Yes.
BYU fans, take note.
Take note. You could wear blue and white exclusively.
Just throwing that out there. There was a lot of red in those stands.
I've seen on Twitter, Cougar Board, and other places, and this happens after every road game we've had since I think Ole Miss, where it's a top program with a great tradition, and. People, Matt, typically some of the result is, wow, the game day atmosphere at Lavelle Edwards is terrible.
Yep.
And, you know, I haven't actually attended a home game, in quite some time. I know that tailgating has started to be a lot bigger than it was when we were students or when I last lived in Utah. And I know they've got the Cougar Walk or the
– The Cougar Walk and the students now – Because the student section's general admission, they all camp out or whatever to get good seats.
Yeah. And you know, you saw all the student section just filing into Wisconsin.
And it was a giant student section.
Yes.
And ridiculously well coordinated.
Yes. And they had chants and songs. And to get ready before they started the wave, they chanted about "Get ready, old people."
It was pretty good.
So, anyway, what other thoughts do you have just on the game day experience in Wisconsin? We'll get to the actual gameplay here in a minute.
Well, you know, I've been to football games at a few universities. A lot of stuff in the Midwest, apparently lately. But I was really surprised at the extent of the tailgating.
Oh my gosh, it went on forever.
It was every parking lot in any venue within a mile of the stadium was full of tailgaters.
Yes.
And people had great, great setups. You know, there was a converted ambulance. I think I saw a school bus.
Yep, there was definitely a school bus.
So there was some cool stuff out there, some cool things being done. It was like the whole community. I mean, so many people filing into that stadium. You know, the jump around before the fourth quarter, frankly, made me a little bit nervous that the structure was going to collapse. I felt an earthquake once in my life. It was a lot like that.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was pretty cool.
Because quite frankly, a lot of people, I had heard about that, and I kind of thought, having not experienced it, you know what I mean? Like, eh.
You feel some vibration.
A bunch of students are jumping. No, everyone jumps around, not just the student section.
The entire stadium.
The Wisconsin fans around us were, as well as, quite frankly, a lot of the BYU fans.
There were some old Wisconsin fans doing it. Yeah.
A couple hip replacement surgeries might be necessary after that game.
Mine included. But the game day environment was cool. You know, this it was a cool experience, and I was surprised at the civility of the fans.
Yes,
I expected them to be much more confrontational and much more like angry drunken rants, but it was mostly friendly drunken rants.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it will be honestly, I enjoyed going to Notre Dame a little more. Part of that was because we had time, because we got there earlier before the game to experience the whole campus.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was just Notre Dame's a little bit more of a historic venue than Camp Randall. But man, what a great game day experience. Like you said, the tailgating is unreal, and the just the sea of red. It's just awesome. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool.
So let's get to the game, Matt. Cody Hoffman had 2 touchdowns. You might have heard of Cody Hoffman.
I've heard the name before.
He's known as a pretty good wide receiver. So Cody Hoffman gets, you know, he's now got the record for touchdowns, receptions, yards. He's got it all.
And I think we're discovering that he does a lot better in the end zone if he has a defender draped all over him.
Apparently, because this is his third game catching a touchdown pass with a guy basically mauling him as he tries to
catch. It's insane. Yeah. And when you watch him out there running routes, I mean, they're grabbing him downfield on every play, hitting his arms when the ball's in the air. I mean, they are interfering with him all the time.
Oh, yes.
And to me, that sends the signal that these defenses really respect what he can do and what they've seen on film. And hopefully that's going to transfer to how he's evaluated by NFL scouts.
Yeah, and I think for him, I mean, he's obviously the best wide receiver that BYU has. I mean, and that's Captain Obvious speaking, copyright Troy Aikman. I really think for him, he came back, he set all the records. So I think mission accomplished, right, for him coming back, wouldn't you say?
I think so. You know, I think there's a part of him, obviously, that, you know, wanted to win. Win a couple of games that didn't go our way this year.
Sure.
But, you know, I think he would have loved to beat Utah, probably. But at the end of the day, I think as far as his positioning going to the next level, I think he's going to have accomplished what he needed to this year.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Now, if you look at, Matt, the entire receiving corps, we've got a tweet bag question that we're going to answer now.
Tweet bag.
Where is it? It's from Justin Sweeney.
It's in the tweet bag.
Oh,
just reach into the tweet bag and pull it out.
So Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney, asks, after games like Utah.
Sweeney,
yeah, he's making a triumphant
return. Sweeney gets his own sound effect.
Yes, he does. Say that again.
Sweeney.
There we go. I like it. So after games like Utah and Wisconsin, I'm terrified, he says, about the wide receiver position when Hoff leaves. Kurtz, yep. Davis, who on earth can help Matthews? Matt, do you feel the same about the wide receiver group post-Hoffman?
Yes. I got nothing for you.
What?
You know, oh, look at all those drops. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, but you know, we've seen some flashes from a couple of these guys. And we have reason to believe that somebody may step up here, but I don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think Matthews is the most likely of candidates. I honestly, besides that, I don't have a good feel for. I mean, obviously they'll have new people come into the program, some guys returning for missions, all that kind of stuff. So the group won't look. It's not just you graduate the graduators, right? I don't know, man. I have to say I'm pretty scared about that too. So I don't really have – wish I had something nicer to say about it.
Yeah, I mean I wish I could be more optimistic because usually I am.
Yes, Yes, you are. You're an optimistic fellow.
You know, but at the end of the day, I mean, maybe somebody comes out, you know, you get somebody new into the program, or somebody has a really good off season, you know, with a whole season of starting under their belt, or, you know, and the kind of reps that they're getting now, and then going into a good off season, maybe, you know, somebody like Matthews comes out and is the guy.
Yeah.
But right now it's scary.
Yeah, I agree. It is very scary. Looking at that position. So sticking with the Wisconsin game, Matt, the defense. You know, I wrote an article for LoyalCougars.com that looks kind of ridiculous now, where I said that this year's defense was as good and maybe better than last year's. I feel kind of silly.
You should feel a little silly right now.
At the time, statistically, they were pretty darn even.
That is most likely not true
anymore. That is not true anymore. And what's happened? Is it people have figured it out, or you think we've just played some teams that happen to exploit some of the defense's more glaring weaknesses?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think some of it is matchups. You look at what Wisconsin was doing. We're not built to defend that. And, you know, you look at, say, for example, what Utah did. We're also not very good at defending that. And it's what they do. And Wisconsin, I mean, what they were doing was what they do to everybody else. It's the way their offense works. And we're just not built to stop it. There are some holes here, and we couldn't scheme out of it. You know, I felt like in the first quarter, especially that opening drive, offensively, Wisconsin was doing whatever they wanted to do. And there was nothing. I mean, it was Swiss cheese. I mean, they were driving trucks through those holes at the line of scrimmage.
Yes, they were.
They were gigantic.
Massive.
And I was not seated close, and it looked big from where I was.
The nice thing, those two video boards also in the stadium.
Yeah, those really helped.
That helped. That helped a lot. Also showed us some terrible calls by the officials. But anyway.
But, you know, I think those video boards, just as an aside, are also useful for the players. It's like being able to watch film right there.
Yeah.
But and then in the second quarter, it looked like we made some adjustments, and they were not having as much success running the ball right up the middle. And even some of the off-tackle stuff, we seem to position everybody to shoot the gaps at just the right time and to close things up. And it looked like we were really holding our own much, much better in the trenches.
Yeah.
And then came the second half, or I guess towards the end of the second quarter. And there was no, you know, they made some counter adjustments to what we were doing, and the defense was not able to recover. So, it's tough to see, but they did all the right things. They did exactly what they needed to do, which included, you know, very often just literally laying on top of Kyle Van Noy, knock him down and just lay on top of him. And it's a lot more difficult for him to make a play that way.
Well, they let Unga, what did he have, like 17 tackles or something? Mm-hmm. They basically said, these other linebackers, you can beat us. But Kyle Van Noy, you are not going to beat us. We're going to double team you. We are going to run away from you. And he still had, like, what, two tackles for loss and didn't have a terrible game by any stretch. Actually, with the type of scheming they did for him, I think he had an excellent game.
And the ridiculous, ridiculous interception. That was insane.
Yes. Well, I mean, that was more luck than anything.
No, you know what?
Hit him right in the chest.
You're in the right place at the right time, though. He got in there and broke up the play.
He broke up the play, but I mean, and he didn't even know he had the ball until it was sitting on his chest.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was an awesome interception.
That was awesome.
So, Matt, anyway, if you look at their drive chart, okay? Look at their drive chart. They had a lot of success against us in that second quarter and that one drive in the first quarter. Long, sustained drives that ended up in the first half, two touchdowns and a field goal, right? Mm-hmm. In the second half, they did not have a lot of sustained drives. They had one drive, which was a TD drive in the third quarter. I think the defense, statistically, they really shut them down after halftime. There's that one drive. They forced four punts and also a field goal when Wisconsin got the ball at the BYU 23 to start the drive. So I look at it this way. The defense is not as good as I thought it was and not as good as last year's. But the defense was not the problem on Saturday. Could they have played better? Sure. But in the second half, they kept it close. You know, they were put in a bad situation. They did give up one big drive. If you look at it, the offense was just not very good. 4.6 yards per play, which was the worst output we've had since Utah. So what do you think about the is this offense just – is it – I mean, is it going to be able to do it against a big-time opponent?
Not yet. Not in 2013. You know, you go back to the conversation we just had about the receivers. I think that's going to be a big piece.
Yes.
Going forward, but right now I think we expect them to be hot and cold in 2013.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess that's kind of silly to say with what's left on the schedule, right? But I don't feel like it's a finished product. I don't think Taysom Hill is a finished product yet.
Not his best game.
No, he was not on. He seemed to get really jumpy early. You know, in his defense, there was a lot of pressure in the backfield.
Yes, early. There was.
And I don't want to get hit by those guys either. you know, but I do feel like they did not do enough early in the game as far as play calling goes to protect him. You know, I think a little bit more, you know, of the rolling him out. There was no reason to ever have him in the pocket in that situation. And some of the option where there's the fake and then the full and that running back turns into a lead blocker that goes up right behind the tackle. That play was just not working.
Yes, it was definitely not working.
And it didn't. And you know, it wasn't going to play to the right matchups, I think, defensively there.
No, I agree.
I'm willing to be patient with the offense through this year, but I think by next year, you know, you've had plenty of time to finish installing this thing and getting it right. But the problem was, is he just was never able to settle down. So passes weren't where they needed to be. And he didn't have the time he needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't disagree with you on any of this. The one thing that bothers me, Matt, more than the offensive execution is some of the dumb mistakes we made. 12 men out of timeouts.
Yeah, that just boggles my mind.
Whether it's a player making a mistake, coaches making a mistake, this deep in the season, that seems to me to be a, I don't want to say unforgivable, but an unacceptable, unacceptable type of thing. And then in the last, we get the ball back at the end of the fourth quarter with 2 minutes and 12 seconds left. We're down by 10 points, right? Two scores, not likely to win, right? Very unlikely at that point to win. But I think you got to go for it. Boy, the offense. We were running run plays. It was like here we are, this fast-moving team, and yet we weren't moving fast.
And there was no teeth to it.
None. I don't know. I think you've got to, at that point, I realize that it's, again, very unlikely that we were going to do it, but that we were going to win. But one of our TD drives was a minute 25 in length. If you score that quickly, you can do an onside kick. Yeah, you have to recover it, but heck, isn't that why you try, right?
Yeah.
You got to give it a shot. I mean, heck, you could have, you know, it could have been something. It was like we were running run plays and didn't seem to be, like, hurrying the same way we had through other times of the game. Quite frankly, it was a little bizarre.
It was a very weird feeling, and there certainly was not a real sense of urgency to the way it was being conducted. Yeah. And I don't know what that is about. I don't know. Are you just, everybody's just so deflated at that point, or, I mean, but if that's true, that's not good. You know, I don't know, but there was definitely a strange feeling to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you go back to point to the offensive ineptitude. I think there were 5 3 and outs, and our first two drives we took a minute and a half total. And down 2 3 and outs. I mean, after two drives we had 1 yard total offense. You know, so there's it was a struggle. But Wisconsin's good. Wisconsin's good, and we'll get to another question that draws on that. But Matt, before we leave this game, Justin had another question for us regarding this game. He says, at one point did you say we drove all this way for this? And he gives us some options. So here is 5 choices, Matt. At what point may have this thought cross your mind? Number 1, the opening drive. I say no.
No, I wasn't quite there yet.
Okay, 2 subsequent 3 and outs. I wasn't there yet either. You?
No, probably not, but I'm getting close at this point.
They're TD right before halftime by Wisconsin.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
That was the dagger. I feel like that really was the dagger.
Yes. Yes, I agree. If you had been able to keep it at 10-3 at halftime, it's just such a different game.
You know, and if it's not there, it's the end. It's the punt. You know, the 3 and out to start the second half. You know, 3 plays for -4 yards and a punt.
That was not good. So that's where he gave some options. Late drive in the fourth quarter where we punted. Where I think maybe we should have gone for it, even though we were still on our side of the field. But the QB draw down 10 with 1 minute left. I was way past that. I was already screaming. So, anyway. So let's, Matt, look forward to the rest of the season.
Yes.
Idaho State's coming up. We're not going to do a full preview of Idaho State.
Why? There's a lot to talk about there.
Yeah.
I take the over.
I take the over. Yes, so
taking the over on every over-under you would predict.
And we will look very good offensively, I have no doubt. Yeah. And yeah. Kyle Van Noy might accidentally kill someone. you know, so maybe a punter. anyway, so, you know, we've got this game coming up. Andre Hutchins, that's at @AC_Hutchins, says, no gripes about the Wisconsin game. They were just playing better. You and I agree with that, right?
Yeah, they were just a better team.
So his question is, what are our chances against Notre Dame? Matt, we talked about this a little bit last week, but now we have more data. What is your take now on that Notre Dame game? Do we have a shot in South Bend?
We have a shot, but it's slim. You know, I was starting to feel pretty good about it, but it's another tough game in a tough environment on the road against a decent team. And I just, after what I saw this last weekend, I don't have a lot of faith that this team pulls that game win out in South Bend.
Yeah, see, I don't feel any differently about it. I knew we weren't as good as Wisconsin, and Notre Dame's not even close to as good of a team as Wisconsin is.
But see, I feel like some of what I saw in this last game wasn't just that Wisconsin was better. They were, right?
Sure.
But dropped passes don't have as much to do with how good that other team is. It has to do with a team showing up for a big game and letting it get into their heads.
Yeah, see, I don't think that's it at all.
And the ball was probably really cold and felt like a slab of granite coming in at, you know, 70 miles an hour or whatever.
Yeah,
those are hard to catch when it's cold, and it's I get that.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying, and I don't totally disagree with you. We've been dropping passes all year. We drop passes against terrible teams. You know,
I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but we had more drop passes here than we had since, I would guess since Utah.
That's cherry picking stats, right? Because the you're playing against better opponents, you're going to have more dropped passes just by the fact that the coverage is going to be closer and guys are going to be afraid about getting hit. Right? If you're wide open in the middle of the field because they're terrible, you don't drop as many passes. So I get what you're saying. I didn't feel like they had a poor game because of the atmosphere, and only they'd be able to tell us that, right? Though they never would. I just felt like their defense was so physical. I mean, they hit everybody every play, right? Yeah. And I just think that gets into people's heads, right? And Notre Dame does have a good defense, fairly physical one. But we're talking about a team that just lost to Pittsburgh. They just lost to Pittsburgh, right? Is Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh's 5-4. They're 2-3 in the ACC, and Notre Dame just lost to them. They had a scare against Purdue, and Purdue is terrible. I don't think Notre Dame's in the same class as – I think they're more in the class of us, which I think that puts us on much firmer ground, and their offense is not very good. So I don't know. I don't – my opinion is unchanged. I think that game is going to be a very close game, and I think BYU has a – I don't know, 40% chance of winning it? What would you give them? Percent chance?
25.
25? Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, 1-4 chance seems about right.
Okay. Fair enough. Higher than you were giving them against Wisconsin. So you agree, yes. Notre Dame's not as good.
No, I agree they're not as good as Wisconsin. But I look at our schedule. I look at the BYU schedule, and what I see is a list of games where BYU beats all the teams that they should, except for Virginia. Right?
Yes.
And then if I look at Notre Dame's schedule, they beat all the teams they should, except for maybe Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so Oklahoma's not as good as people thought. I don't know if that's a game they should have lost or not. That's a tough one. What are their other losses here? Their other losses, Michigan has – Michigan maybe. That was on the road. Oklahoma was at home, though. They got beat fairly bad. I don't know.
That's, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. That's a decent team.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point.
And it's just one comparison, right? I mean, it's sure. Not.
And Oklahoma has only lost a rivalry game and against what turns out I think is a really, really good Baylor team. So no, your point is well taken. I think the problem that we had against Wisconsin defensively was the fact that they have these massive offensive linemen that just mauled us and opened up those huge holes. Notre Dame doesn't have that ability to pound you like Wisconsin does. They can throw over the top like Houston did.
But that's what they're going to try and do.
Yeah, I don't think they have the quarterback to do it. But yes, I agree. That's what they will try to do. But we'll see. We'll have a chance to potentially talk about that Notre Dame game some more as it gets closer, Matt. So let's move on to did we have another tweet bag question? Despite the poor performance, this is Justin Sweeney at Justin D. Sweeney against Wisconsin. He thinks BYU wins out. Okay. He's closer to me than he is to you, which is a huge success for 2013. So, Matt, if BYU wins out, okay, and ends the year at concluding a bowl game, that'd be four more games. Am I doing this right? Four more games. Then they end up being 10-3. Isn't that a success? Didn't we at the beginning of the year? Now, granted, the losses aren't where we thought they would be. But didn't we say on this podcast 10-3 was over what either of us thought they were going to get?
Yeah, 10-3 would be a better overall loss column outcome than I expected.
Yes. Now, Virginia was not one we had. Now, if they do lose to Notre Dame, which you're predicting that they will, and I guess I am too, saying 40-45% chance, right? I'm predicting Notre Dame to win, though I may change that. We'll see. Then you're at 8-4, if you 9-4, right? 8-4, 9-4. If you win the bowl game, 9-4. We said that was kind of what we thought, right? But why does this with a lot of fans feel like such a massive disappointment? If a 9-win, 10-win season with the toughest schedule we've maybe ever had.
because of the way that it went down. You yeah. never should have lost that Virginia game.
Nope.
It was a weird situation. I'll move on. The loss to Utah really hurts the way a lot of fans feel about a season, especially this year.
Yep.
The loss to Wisconsin, I think a lot of people can get over. But I think people look back, you look back on this, you know, win or lose against Notre Dame, I think people look back on it and they say, oh, man, if I could just have back those two games that we probably should have won early in the year, you know, this is a two-loss team, you know, that's you know, has a shot at making a statement, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, I think that's, it's the way it happened.
Yeah.
That I think bothers people the most is where those losses came and how they came.
Yeah. And I really thought, you know, when Utah beat us, I thought they were a really good team. And then they got beat by UCLA the next week, I guess 2 weeks later. And then they beat Stanford. And I thought, you know what? Utah's a good team. We lost to a good team. I can kind of, like the Wisconsin loss, you can kind of go, it stinks because it's our rival, leaves a bad taste in our mouth. But we lost to a good team. And now they've dropped three in a row. And in pretty ugly fashion. Arizona was pretty ugly. USC was very ugly. And Arizona State, they were ahead. So I look at that, and they're going to get absolutely destroyed by Oregon. And they, you know, at this point, their bowl game hopes are dwindling. So now both of those losses, as you said, not just because it's a rivalry game, but it also looks bad just because it's possible they're just not – the Utah's not that good.
Right.
You know, and that makes that,
well, and you beat,
that makes
and you
the
beat
losses
Texas.
Worse.
And you beat Texas, who it turns out is they're better now than they were in September.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've won, what, six in a row?
Mm-hmm.
Beat West Virginia in overtime this past Saturday, and they've kind of cruised – a little bit in some of those games, Oklahoma, TCU, and Kansas. So, I mean, they're sitting at 7-2. If they beat Oklahoma State this week, all of a sudden that game against Baylor becomes just this massive contest in the season. So, anyway, crazy, crazy, crazy week in college football overall, but so let's move on from this. We'll come back to football at the end, Matt. Let's briefly talk about basketball.
Yes.
So we're not going to talk about this a lot, as I mentioned earlier. By the time you listen to this podcast, folks, there's going to have been a Stanford game.
Yeah.
What we will say is, Matt, you look at that first game against Weber State. What's your two takeaways from the game?
The first one that kind of jumps out at me is foul trouble for Eric Micah.
Yes.
Makes me a little nervous.
Yes, especially right? We're going against, and, you know, we'll either be Nostradamus or something else, saying that, you know, Stanford's got a little bit better big men than Weber State, mm-hmm. and can he stay out of foul trouble against an even better front court?
Yeah. And so that's the first one that jumps out to me. The second is I love that Kyle Collinsworth had a double-double.
He was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's great.
10-6.
And I think you need that. You know, and that's – I think he's – I think that's going to be important, you know, as we go down the stretch here, is for him to be able to fill that gap.
Yeah, yeah. My two takeaways are related, though I love – Your two as well. I totally agree. Carlino took the most shots of anyone on the team. I did not see that coming.
Right.
I don't know if that will continue. He had a good night.
22 points.
6 boards, 6 assists. Decent shooting night. Only 1-for-4 from behind the arc. But a decent shooting night. Did not get to the free throw line, which is a little worrisome because I'd like to see him driving and drawing some fouls. But a good game from Carlino. Related to that, Matt, is Haas, Carlino, and Collinsworth were off the floor for a combined total of 11 minutes. Combined.
Yeah.
Mike obviously had some foul trouble. Austin had a little bit of foul trouble. And then Winder and Worthington, who we both talked about in our season preview, that we thought they'd be major contributors – did play meaningful double-digit minutes, though neither of them filled up the stat sheet that much. But then, folks we thought would be more involved, Bartley, Halford, and Sharp, they combined for a total of 14 minutes. Looking at that, Matt, it appears, even against a team like Weber State, Coach Rose thinks we're 70. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's what it looks.
That's the way it looks. I mean, we've now got a real game to go off of.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what he does against Stanford, right? But that's really what it looks like.
And it really, when you look at our front court, you know, when we previewed it, I wasn't as nervous. But now with a game under the belt, you've got Micah, Austin, Worthington, and Sharp really as your big men. And Collinsworth, too, right? Because he kind of goes in between perimeter. Wow, we are, once again, for another season in a row, we're really shallow in the front court.
Yeah.
Like, it goes down fast. Nothing against Worthington or Sharp. But if Collinsworth or Micah or Hurt are in foul trouble, you've really got a pretty pedestrian front court. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Sharp is a great glue guy. He can come in and do it. Worthington, I don't know if we know what he is yet, you know, and maybe he's better than I think he's going to be as a freshman. But, you know, Mike and Collinsworth are the studs, and Austin is really large, you know what I mean, and can do some things. I worry about that one. I feel a lot better that if Carlino went down for a short period of time, we've got Bartley and Halford that could pick up the slack, right? Mm-hmm. If Micah goes down, who picks up the slack?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. In a game where he had foul trouble, what they did was put in Winder on the wing and bump Collinsworth up to power forward, right?
Right.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But as we said, good takeaways from this game, and we'll know more once they play Stanford. And you guys listening to this, they already have. So, Matt, we're going to finish here with a little game.
Uh-oh.
We are going to do another of our famous drafts, Matt, that the fans love. They love them. They eat them up.
They do.
So, Matt, we are going to draft wide receivers from BYU history.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready for this? Can you handle it?
Oh, I can. Can you handle it?
Now, when I say wide receivers, should we include tight ends or no? And make it pass catchers. You want to include tight ends? Because it's a little fuzzy in BYU history, because technically some of these guys were tight ends, but they certainly, in the case of, say, Pitta, and I don't know, and then you got, like, Todd Christensen was a fullback.
It gets murky in there.
So
you have a hard time comparing, like, Atula Mealy and Cody Hoffman.
Yeah. So let's stick with wide receivers.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
So no Pitta, no Reno Mahe. Let's stick with – actually, Mahe was a wide receiver for part of it. He's kind of a hard one. He's
eligible. How many rounds are we going here?
We're going to go three each, so we're going six deep in the history of BYU.
I don't see Mahe becoming a problem here.
Okay. Maybe you do. So, Matt, you go first. You are –
Oh, really?
I'm magnanimous. I'm filled with magnanimosity.
Okay. With the first pick in this absolutely ridiculous draft of BYU receivers.
Yes.
I select Cody Hoffman.
Ooh.
Why would I not take Cody Hoffman?
Ooh.
There's really only one other person you'd consider taking over him, which I'm pretty sure you're going to take with your next pick.
McKay,
but this guy owns all the records. He
yes.
owns all the records, and he carries people on passing routes and still catches touchdowns.
And for three of his years, he mainly had Riley Nelson and Jake Heaps throwing him the football.
Right. The guy is a stud.
That is one. Honestly, that is one of the best arguments as to why he's the best wide receiver we've ever had. The other guys we're going to talk about, most of them had really good quarterbacks throwing them the football.
Yep.
So great choice. With my second pick, I take the obvious choice as well, Austin Colley.
There he is.
Austin Colley with my second pick. Obviously, the man who held most of those records before Hoffman just broke them. At least from a wide receiver standpoint, he held all of those records. with Pitta, of course, holding the number of receptions record as a tight end. Okay, Matt, your second pick.
This is
where it starts to get a little harder.
It starts to get a little tougher here. With this next pick, oh man, what do you do here?
You pick somebody. That would be my guess.
I'm going to take Ben Cahoon.
Ben Cahoon.
Yeah, I am.
Coming.
But you know what? I feel like I'm really just taking him because he dominated in the CFL.
Their professional careers do not count.
He was pretty good and very reliable. You know what? I'm going to regret that pick later, but it's too late.
It is too late. You have passed your cards to the – yeah, Ben Cahoon.
Yeah, I wish I could have that one back.
Yeah.
To be honest, no offense.
No offense, Ben Cahoon. Well, that's fine because I'm going to pick Eric Drage.
I almost did just because I knew you were going.
Why you pick a guy with 1,000 less yards?
Whatever.
Don't worry about it.
He's got some pretty ridiculous circus catches in his highlight
reel.
Ben
Cahoon? Oh, heck yeah.
So,
and to be fair, he was a JC transfer, right? So he only played two seasons. Mm-hmm. And one of those seasons, if I'm remembering right, let's pull up his stats of Ben Cahoon. Yeah, one of those seasons, his first season, he had 11 catches. So you're really going off of that senior season of 1997, which was a very good season for him.
It was a great season for the whole team, right? I mean, but he was a key contributor to that team.
Yes, he was.
Which, as we all know, and I've said this before, I've got real serious bias.
Yes, you do.
Towards that team.
Yes,
one of
you
my
do.
Favorite seasons in history, if not my favorite.
And Drage, of course, 90-93, he may have caught just a few passes from a guy named Detmer. So, but 1 year, 1991, Matt, 46 catches for 1,018 yards, 10 touchdowns. He averaged over 22 yards per reception that year.
Yikes.
Yikes is right. So that's Eric Drage. Matt, your final pick, number three.
All right. You know, I'm going to try not to mess this one up.
You probably will.
I'm going to go with... All right. Come on, you can do this, Mangum. Mark Bellini.
Mark Bellini. Do you mean Mark Bellini or Matt Bellini? Just so we don't have any confusion about the Bellinis.
I'm pretty sure I mean Mark.
Yes, you do.
I'd say his banner year was probably 1985, with just over 1,000 yards and 14 touchdowns.
Yes.
Also a key
contributor on the 84 championship team.
That's right. So I feel like historically it's a good selection. For what he did for, you know, 84 team, and it was a good time. And when you look at where he sits on the list of records overall at BYU, this is a good place for him to fall in this draft.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, my last choice, I had a really hard time because if you look at total seasons, you might say total career, you might say one thing or another. And if you look at just a particular season, you know, you might say something different, right? Because obviously there were a couple of one-season wonders in there, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go more on the career side and stick on the career side, and I'm going to pick. Are you ready, Matt, for the final pick of our draft?
I'm really interested to see where you go here.
I'm going to pick. Well, actually, I'm going to do a total homer pick because he's my favorite player when I was a kid. Glenn Kozlowski.
I knew it.
I was just hoping you wouldn't pick him in front of me.
I thought about doing that one, too, because I wasn't sure if you were going to go with your second pick with Drage or Kozlowski.
Yeah, Kozlowski had his best season in 84, 55 catches for 879 yards and 11 touchdowns. The other years are not nearly as good. I'm a big fan of Kozlowski. I loved watching him. He did also have a career as a special teams player in the NFL for a few years. Did play some wide receiver as well, but most of his snaps were for the Bears on special teams. Anyway, a big fan of Kozlowski. So that's six good wide receivers. Matt, we left a few others off the list that probably deserve mentioning. I will mention a couple of them. The aforementioned Reno Mahe, who spent some time at two different positions. Margin Hooks.
Yeah.
Really good player.
Absolutely.
Really good player. Matt Bellini. We talked about Mark Bellini, but Matt Bellini deserves mentioning as well. Am I missing anybody else? I think
Gordon Hudson, maybe.
No, he's a tight end. He was a tight end. Andy Boyce.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're
that's
right.
Who else I was looking for. Andy Boyce had a couple of really good seasons, and that's kind of probably it. I mean, you can say Todd Watkins and a few other folks, but I think that's the list. I think we're pretty close on our list.
Yeah, I think there's probably a handful that you could probably consider in there. You know, arguably throwing in Margin Hooks or Todd Watkins, but yeah. I think we're about good.
And you know, a lot of the best receivers, quote unquote, we've had over time have been tight ends. I mean, the tight end list is pretty impressive. Pitta.
Well, see, that's where, you know, this conversation gets tricky, right? Is trying to compare. Just because the roles in the offense are different.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
between
exactly.
What a good tight end does and what some of these guys, you know, Margin Hooks, who's caught an 83-yard bomb. Right? I mean, it's just a different it's a difficult comparison.
A great one is Chad Lewis, okay? So Chad Lewis went on to play in the NFL, right?
Right.
He never had more than 456 yards receiving. You know what I mean?
I've said this before. I don't know that Chad Lewis was the best tight end on that team.
Oh, what? That it was Mealy?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? But
and I got to wonder what happens to Mealy in the NFL without the injury.
I don't know. I mean, Mealy was a physical specimen, right?
The guy was just a beast.
But, you know, he also never had a massive statistical year. I mean, 96, 46 yeah. catches, 692 yards. It's actually a very good tight end year. But not Dennis Pittman numbers, you know.
Right.
But again, like you said, roles in the offense, how the offense was structured, and tight ends at BYU, though they were used in the passing game a lot, used to do a lot more blocking than they did more recently. So Matt,
yeah,
that's...
Yeah, Pittman was definitely used differently than either of those other guys in 96.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. All right. Well, Matt, that's it. That's it. Definitive draft. So we will be... kind of irregular over the next couple of weeks. We might have a podcast or two. Matt will talk about that off air, but there might be some podcasts coming up, or we might be on break for a couple of weeks due to some things happening with us. So anyway, thanks for listening and downloading. Matt, you got anything else for us before we take off?
No, I'm just looking forward to watching some hoops tonight.
Yeah, well. I don't think I can stay up quite that late.
I'm an old man. You are an old man.
I might fall asleep watching it.
That's okay. That's what old men do.
That's right. Well, thanks again for downloading. Thanks for listening. And we will, of course, catch you next time.
Go Cougars.